Recently, a Minnesota mother had a minor son who was shepherded through the process of pursuing a sex change by county officials without her consent. We're going to talk about that right now on this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is Eric Cardell, special counsel with the Thomas More Society, and he is fighting this case of injustice. Eric, great to have you on the program. By the way, how do you pronounce your last name?
Cardall. You got it right.
Cardall. Okay, so you're Norwegian, because Dahl means valley. I don't know what car means. I'll have to ask my wife.
Yeah, it's a very familiar Norwegian name. It's like Thor, Kor.
Yeah.
And so Kor's valley, basically.
Kor. Okay, so tell us about this particular case. How recently was this?
It's 2015. It began, and but the important part was that when the child was 15, he wanted to become independent, and in Minnesota that requires a quarter of emancipation because the parent here is fit. No one's suggesting Anne Marie Calguero is anything less than a committed mother, and so the child did not want to go through that, and found that there were statutes in Minnesota that allowed the government agency, like you mentioned, the county, the school district, and medical providers to honor the teenager's decision-making without parental notice or consent.
Wow. So here you had a boy. Is this a single household, single-parent household?
She remarried, but she had custody over the child.
Oh, okay.
By court order, and so it was one of her child from a previous marriage.
Okay, and this was a young man, right? And then he felt like he was a girl or something going through trans. What's the phrase? Gender dystopia or dysphoria. That's it. Gender dysphoria.
That's right. But remember, here the issue is that he wasn't going through that, but the child wanted to be treated like an adult. And we do have court processes in Minnesota for that. The teenager files a petition for emancipation. The court then can order the emancipation be full, of course, but also partial, contingent, conditional. And so the judge is left in the position of making a decision in the best interest of child, something we're very familiar with in a family law or child protection context.
Yes. And I understand the lower courts essentially ruled with the boy getting this sex change operation and against the mother. And she didn't even know about it? She didn't find out until after the surgery was done?
Yeah, it was right after the treatments were provided, the hormonal treatments were provided. Then I believe after he was 18, he got the surgery.
Oh.
But the point here is that, the lower courts disagreed that the due process clause that protects fit parents' rights applies to the ending of parental rights. We all kind of agree, on the point that the due process clause applies, when the child's a baby, right? A fit parent should have possession of the baby, and the government shouldn't take the baby away without giving notice to the kid. But our position is that also applies to the ending of parental rights. Basically, the government's going to have statutes that cause welfare payments, insurance coverage, medical service providers, and school districts to honor decisions of teenagers without notice to the parent, that the due process clause would apply means that's unconstitutional.
Yeah. And I understand she didn't even, not only did she not give her consent, she wasn't even notified about these changes happening to her own child.
That's right. So remember, there's a two-part process here. The county, the medical providers, and the school district say, well, we're going to honor this 15-year-old's decisions as if they were made by an adult. That, for all intents and purposes, ends, the rights of the parent. And they didn't even give the parent notice of that decision.
Wow. And isn't she, as the parent, responsible for the fallout, even, beyond the age of him being beyond the age of 18?
Of course. These rules and statutes that are authorizing the medical providers, the county, and the school districts to do these things. The decisions are being made by low-level bureaucrats. not a judge. A judge would make a decision according to Minnesota's emancipation law, which would be balanced and complete, looking out for the best interest of the child, but also honoring parental rights, at least to notice, right?
Yeah.
And with these low-level bureaucrats, these statutes don't provide any of those regulations. In fact, we wouldn't have a complaint at all if these low-level bureaucrats were required to have a court order of emancipation before honoring the child as an adult, obviously.
Okay, translate that from lawyer talk. In other words, basically, these bureaucrats did what they did without some sort of court sanction or allowance to do so. Is that what you're saying?
Basically. That's right. That in Minnesota, a child under the common law can go to court and say, you know, I want to be emancipated from my parent. And then the court order can be complete, could be grant emancipation partially, conditionally, temporarily, whatever. But nonetheless, you have a court process, everyone gets noticed, everyone makes their arguments, and the child wins or loses. But what we have in Minnesota are statutes that are allowing these processes out of court to occur, where the county can determine whether the child's emancipated, the medical provider can determine whether to treat the child's decisions as an adult, and the school district has its own policy saying, well, if we think they're an adult, we'll treat them that way. Hmm. And we think that's horrific because we think that parental input is critical to teenager decision-making, and the government has to have a reason to take away that parental influence and from a fit parent, right? So we're not saying that Child Protection Services, there isn't a place for that, but when the parent's been fit, when the parent's been a blue-ribbon mom like my client and it unconditionally loves the child, why should that input be disregarded by a low-level bureaucrat at the school or at the county or at the medical provider's office? You know, these decisions should be made by a judge because they're so important. They're as important as any child custody decision.
And I understand that a lot of people who've gone through sex change operations and so forth later regret it. There's an extraordinarily high level of suicide or suicide attempts of those who've actually completed the process. Maybe they're happy at first, but within a couple of years, they don't like what they've done to themselves.
Absolutely. And remember that, you know, parents, the good parents love their children forever unconditionally.
Yeah.
And the government always promises the foster care or the government making decisions for the child rather than the parent are a good thing. But the statistics suggest otherwise. That if all these, you know, 15, 16, 17-year-olds who want to have, you know, county benefits, live in an apartment, make educational decisions, medical benefits, whatever, if they're all allowed to go to the government, that means we have less parental influence over teenagers. And it's really bad policy, and particularly it's horrific when you consider the parents we're talking about are fit. They're good parents. And maybe, you know, the children, you know, have different opinions, but a lot of teenagers have different opinions with their parents. And if they're told they can just go to the county and get welfare payments, they might do it.
Huh. Well, where is this case in the courts?
We petitioned the U.S. Supreme Court, and that means that we lost in the lower courts. Ironically, the district court, you know, said, well, we don't like the way you use emancipate to describe what happened to Ms. Calgaro's child. And then the Eighth Circuit said, we don't like the way you terminate. So we're not going to call it emancipate or terminate anymore. We're going to say that the parental control ended. And so when parental control of a child ends by government decision-making and statutes and rules, we say the Due Process Clause applies. And it's the first time that this issue has been presented to the U.S. Supreme Court, and there's no U.S. Supreme Court opinion on this issue, nor are there any other federal court opinions, and that's why we think it's so important.
Wow. So, I mean, it's just, this is like a nightmare for this family, I'm sure. By the way, I mean, who knows where the boy is right now, has he been rejiggered to be supposedly female? He has?
I don't know all the details on that, but the mother is communicating with the child, you know, up to twice a day. I think he's moved out of state, and the relationship is pretty sound.
Oh.
And, I think that this sort of unconditional love is present in the case.
Yeah.
He's an adult now. that doesn't affect the standing of the case because of the way the issues are presented. But the important point is that this is an issue that the U.S. Supreme Court should take and look at, because really what's going on here, just the real bottom line political stuff, and you know this, the age of emancipation, the age of adulthood, is extremely controversial in our culture. Uh-huh. And the other side wants to lower it to 17, 16, 15, 14, the age of consent for sex, all that's related.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of blowback from religious people in this country. No, we got to keep it there. These teenagers need parental help. They can't just be let loose. And when they can't win at the ballot box, they can't win at the state legislatures, they create these exceptions. Oh, the 15-year-old can get welfare payments to move out of the house. The 15-year-old can go to the medical provider and get sex change if their treatments. The teenager can make their decisions at the school without parental input. This is all about the government taking control of the child as opposed to the mom and dad having control. This is the heart of the culture battle in the sense of what is family in the United States.
Isn't Minnesota a state that back, maybe 20 years ago, you passed a law on parental notice for abortion, and all of a sudden the number of abortions went down dramatically, as I recall. Did I recall that correctly?
I think that's right. And so the point is that...
I mean, it seems like there would be an application there. And, there has to be some kind of parental notice, at least, for these kind of life-changing decisions children are making.
Oh, right. On the medical decision-making, remember, your audience remember fit parents, that is the parents that never got in trouble with CPS and so forth, a teenage child, and then third, non-emergency elective procedures. And we're not talking about sexually transmitted diseases here that need to be treated. We're not talking abortion, the issue where you have, a pregnancy that's going to, terminate in 9 months or whatever, however I'll put it. And so the point is, this is non-emergency elective procedures. Why shouldn't the parent have a say, have an influence over those decisions?
You mean, why shouldn't they, is what you're saying, right?
Right, why shouldn't they? I mean, what's the government's point? Why is the government saying that Ms. Calgaro doesn't get to talk to the medical providers? And the medical providers have a statute to protect themselves, because the statute says that the medical providers can treat the child as an adult under certain circumstances.
The people that helped shepherd this process for this boy to transition to supposedly a girl, I mean, the bottom line is, look, all the cells in their body, DNA, I mean, I understand there's something like 6,000 indicators of our gender, and it's either male or female. So I don't buy the whole transgender thing, but who were the people doing this? School officials? Was it local welfare sociologists or something? I mean, who actually helped this boy to go down this path?
Fantastic question. It's the heart of the case and why this case kind of laid out. After Mr. Calgaro and I did a ton of investigation, we found out the answer to your question. And there's one document from the Minnesota Legal Aid Clinic that was provided to the 15-year-old boy. This is a publicly funded nonprofit that provides legal aid, including to teenagers. And they advised the teenager in a written document, almost stated it as fact, that the child was emancipated. And then they fell in line, the county, the school district, the medical providers, and they just followed this letter written by a lawyer saying he was emancipated. But the Minnesota statutes, you see, allowed the county and the medical provider to do that. The school district made its own decision. So it was the legal aid clinic, the county, the medical provider, and the school district all acting off the same sheet of music, if you will, in coordinating the ending of the parental rights of Ms. Calgaro without notice and without a hearing and without a process to restore her parental rights. Because remember that letter done by the legal aid clinic, they never talked to me or Ms. Calgaro about our side of the story.
Yeah.
Fit parent, wants to be involved in these decisions because she's a parent who's unconditionally loves her child.
Right.
And so she would have made her case.
Yeah. All right, well, we're out of time, but boy, this is a case to pray for. ThomasMoreSociety.org for more information. Thank you so much, Eric, for being with us.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.